The views and opinions expressed on the following program are those of the host and may not necessarily be the views or opinions of this station, its management, sponsors, or staff. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on The Mitch Hanks Show. It might seem
crazy what I'm about to say. Good morning. This is Phil Blackwell sitting in for Mitch Hanks today. Mitch is extending his Mother's Day weekend with his parents down in Indiana. And he's asked me to sit in for this time on Monday morning. And I'm really looking forward to the 3 hours we have together. In this first hour, we're going to be talking with Jim Hoyt, professor of journalism at the University of Wisconsin. And among many things, we're going to be talking about the nature of journalistic coverage of the presidential campaign going on this year. And then in the second hour, Fred Mose is going to be with us. And Fred knows just about everybody in town and just about everything in town. And we're going to be talking about the Madison Area Technical College decisions and about the transformation that's happening in the city center. And then in the third hour, Dan Harper is going to be here. Dan's the co-president of Freedom From Religion Foundation. They've just sued the U.S. government over having a chaplain in the Senate and the legislature. And so we'll be talking about that and a number of other separation of religion and state issues. But we welcome Jim Hoyt here, certainly a veteran of journalism and broadcast news with his work both teaching at the university and also being involved with NBC News, Washington, D.C. Jim, good to see you here.
Glad to be here, Phil.
I've been around Madison now for about a year. I'm filling in as an interim at a United Methodist Church downtown. Jim's a member of it, and what happens is that now that I'm moving around Madison, so I'm running into all of your students, who most of them are gainfully employed, not all of them in journalism, but they think you're wonderful. So what was it you were teaching them that made such an impression on them?
Well, during my entire 30-year career on the faculty here, virtually every semester I taught the large introduction to mass media course, 250 up to 500 students a semester. I enjoyed teaching it. There was a combination of content, substance, and a little bit of showbiz and some comedy routines that went along with it. But consequently, I got to interact with a significant number of students, not only journalism majors, but it was something I enjoyed, something apparently they enjoyed and learned from, and I'm always gratified to hear from them that it was a good experience for them. But beyond that, I also taught specific courses in broadcast journalism, as well as mass media ethics, basic reporting, and a variety of other items in the journalism curriculum. But if people recognize my name or my face, it's typically because I taught that large enrollment course for all those years.
Okay, well, if any of you are out there listening and want to give a call to remind Jim of why he was important to you, you could certainly do that this morning. The call-in number is 608-210-1667. But I really want to get us to the issue today about journalism and the coverage of the presidential campaign. About 6 weeks ago, President Obama gave a speech at a journalism prize ceremony. I'm looking at an article in the New York Times by Mark Landler, who had the president saying that a job well done is about more than just handing somebody a microphone. And he talked about the coverage of the 2016 campaign, calling it an entirely untethered to reason and fact and analysis. And he said, I was going to call it a carnival atmosphere, but that implies fun. So he's not having any fun, and I'm not sure many of the others of us are having fun. What's going on with the coverage of this campaign?
Well, the coverage of the campaign is clearly affected by the overall economics of the mass media industry today. Mm-hmm. Media are not doing well financially. Nobody has yet learned or discovered how to make money off the internet. Mm-hmm. They're doing it. They're selling ads. Some of them are almost breaking even. But in the interim, what has been happening to so many of the media outlets is what happens to other businesses when you're in financial stress. You begin to cut back. So they cut back. So they cover the same number of stories, perhaps the same issues with fewer people. Therefore, the reporting is not as thorough, is not in as much in depth. They rely on other sources, subscribe to other news sources that they don't really necessarily know how good they are, mm-hmm. whether they have been vetted or not, but at least it's information, it's content that's out there. So it becomes much more superficial. And to get to the bottom line that I'd really like to discuss, and maybe some of our listeners would like to weigh in on, I'm not sure the audience demands it or wants to know or needs to feels they need to know. I find myself ending a conversation when somebody talks about some issue that they're upset about or a story that they've read that they didn't like, and I'll say, so where did that come from? I mean, mm-hmm. who did the reporting? And their eyes kind of gloss over, like, well, it's out there somewhere,
yep.
and so somebody picked it up and I read it, and it agrees with me. Mm-hmm. So it must be true. I sometimes feel like I'm kind of a dinosaur in that I care about where the information came from, who did the mm-hmm. reporting, who vetted the sources, and so on. Part of the equation is I don't think the audience is expecting or demanding as much. They're willing to go with stories that may not be as thoroughly reported as we have been accustomed to.
Well, I think one of the questions we could ask of anyone who's listening today is, why are you listening today to the Mitch Hanks Show? What is it that you expect? How does that inform you? But then what else do you find as a trustworthy source? The network news, PBS, BBC, who's out there that you can trust?
And that's a good question. I find myself so often asking, okay, who did the reporting? Mm-hmm. Who did the digging? Who found the information? Oftentimes it's vague, it's a little bit nebulous. There are reporters at some of the major news organizations who do a very good job. I give credit to, again, the major traditional news outlets, the New York Times, the Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, have reporting staffs that they give them the opportunity to go out and dig into develop stories. So much of what I read comes from just a nebulous source that it's not clear where it came from, how it ended up in the news, and whether I should believe it or not. Mm-hmm. And that brings me back around to my issue about not being aware of if audiences really expect mm-hmm. as much of their media as they should.
If you remember the film Broadcast News,
oh yes,
where the newscaster has become such a fashionable character because of his anger. Mm. And so they take the news and make it entertainment. Mm. And so we'll get to that in a moment or two since we're going to take a break. But if you are listening and wanted to chime in with Jim Hoyt and me, Phil Blackwell, the number 608-210-1667. Where do you get the news and why does it matter to you?
Welcome back to the Mitch Hanks Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to the Mitch Hanks Show.
Good morning. This is Phil Blackwell sitting in for Mitch today. Mitch is with his parents down in Indiana. And we're here with Jim Hoyt, professor of journalism at the University of Wisconsin, and also one who's very experienced in NBC News and Washington and other places. And we were talking about how news coverage has basically become entertainment more than in-depth news. And my question of any who are listening in today, if you want to share with Jim and me, what are your sources of news? What do you trust most and what matters to you? Give a call, 608-210-1667. 608-210-1667. So, Jim, what's the balance between news and entertainment on major sources of news these days?
Well, entertainment certainly is a part of it. And I know, aware of a number of stations and networks who, when they are looking to enhance their ratings, to do better in the marketplace, so often the recommendations that they get and the recommendations they implement have to do with what I would call window dressing. Getting a new set, lighting it a little differently, coming up with new graphics, a little faster paced background, sound bed, maybe a little faster paced to the overall newscast, and don't very often address the substance, the content of what they're covering. There are some exceptions to that. I think some of the networks have been making an attempt to distinguish themselves. Some of the local stations have kind of recognized this marketplace and said, okay, we're going to set ourselves aside compared to the competition. What we're going to do is cover stories in more depth and devote time to that. There is some evidence that that's been paying off for stations, but they're few and far between, and goes back to the economics of what's facing the news media these days. They are not making much money. The marketplace for stations, buying and selling stations, interestingly, has continued to be fairly good. Gannett, the largest publisher in the country, just recently completed its purchase of the Milwaukee Journal, Scripps newspapers, that included the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and last week just made an offer that was turned down to purchase Tribune, Chicago Tribune, Los Angeles Times. So there's a marketplace for it. Not that they are making much money now, but they're looking down the road saying, okay, in the future, people are going to want information. And if they're going, assuming that's the case, who's in a better position to provide that information about their local market than the local newspaper?
Okay, we're going to take a call from Laura is on the phone. Laura, please.
Yeah, but that still hasn't addressed how do they monetize that information. I'm wondering what your thoughts are about the effect of the whole notion, going back to Buckley v. Vallejo in the 70s, that that speech is, I'm sorry, that money equals speech, and how much the outlets depend upon these political seasons and political contests for their income. I would imagine that every 4 years, the bottom line of especially TV stations is augmented tremendously by the amount of political ads that they're getting, and political ads from dubious sources and with dubious vetting on the part of the stations. I noticed that several stations around the state actually had to pull some ads because of the threat that they were false and the possibility of lawsuits. I'm just wondering, to me, right now our political crisis is surrounding the way we are funding our political campaigns, and in large part that funding goes towards media.
Jim, this is a very good refinement to the point you were making in general. How do you respond?
Yeah, we haven't really talked directly about advertising part of it yet, but that clearly is a part of the overall message that comes from the media, that's both the news content as well as advertising that pays the bills for it. Some stations have policies. Some stations have more rigorous policies. As you referred to, there were three stations in the state of Wisconsin over the weekend that refused commercials because they were questioning the content of those commercials. Was it accurate or not? Only three stations that did it. There are stations that refuse to run political commercials during their newscasts. Mm-hmm. They want to keep that line sacred, separating the newscast from the content. They lose money as a result of doing that. Some of them build it up in times before or after. But they cannot have direct editorial control, or they cannot edit the content. If an ad is bought, the responsibility for the content of the ad is really on the purchaser. The company purchases the ad, not on the station themselves. They're exempt from anything that would be related to that.
Yeah. Well, there is a kind of a perceived or an intended separation between who's buying the ad that says this is not from the campaign, this is just, you know, some neutral, not at all neutral, source.
Outside.
And then there are the ones that are campaign generated. And the notion that somehow, and this is clearly true in Wisconsin politics, that you can buy time for opinion as a almost as a subversive group. You don't know quite who those people are. I imagine there's big money then, isn't there, for these stations who have to make
money? And we don't know exactly. The disclosure rules have been watered down to the extent.
Okay. Okay, let's take another call here. Is it Charlie? Okay, let's hear it.
Hello?
Yes, okay, please. Give us your
Hi.
Opinion. Yes, Charlie.
Yeah, in a not-too-distant past, news divisions were not expected to make money, and that was a direct result of the laws at the time. So it's a matter of making a choice, public policy wise. You know, bring back the fairness doctrine, things like that will make it possible for, you know, the news division was, you know, a sort of a public service that was financed by other revenue from, you know, like CBS or NBC, and, you know, it wasn't expected to make money. And one other thing I wanted to say is that one of the great, really great outlets that has recently folded was on cable news was the Al Jazeera channel.
Mm-hmm.
That, I thought, was really a unbiased, but of course, being Al Jazeera is, you know, vilify it, but I think it's foolish because Qatar couldn't afford to underwrite it anymore.
Jim?
Yeah, you're absolutely correct that for many years, the wording of the Federal Communications Act that stations were licensed to serve the public interest, convenience, and necessity was taken at face value. That was what you were expected to do. News was a public service. You were not expected to make money on it. And they did it. The goal for the news directors oftentimes was, yeah, don't embarrass us, don't get us in legal trouble, and don't cost us too much money. And outside of that, do whatever you want to do. But then along came deregulation, marketplace took over, and consultants came in and said, by the way, do you know you can actually make money doing the news? And boy, did the eyes lighten up of the general managers.
Okay, we're going to take a break in a moment, and then we're actually going to get back to the political campaign that is happening right now, and the role of the journalists' coverage, and in some ways what President Obama was saying was a lack of intensity on the part of the journalists.
Welcome to The Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on The Mitch Hanks Show.
Good morning. This is Phil Blackwell sitting in for Mitch. Mitch is with his parents in Indiana today. And our guest in this first hour is Jim Hoyt, professor of journalism at the University of Wisconsin, history with NBC News in Washington, D.C. And Jim, you'll be happy to know that President Obama agrees with you when he talked about the...
Sure, it wasn't the other way around.
Well, whoever takes the credit in the footnotes, I don't know. Maybe he's reading you. But he talked about how the news media really is not giving a very critical, insightful assessment of the current political campaign. In part, he says, because of the relentless economic pressures that have changed the way news organizations operate.
Yeah.
And that's what you've been telling us. But that's not an excuse for not asking the questions that are behind the promises that politicians are making. And here he could be talking about Trump or Sanders or even Clinton. He said, when people put their faith into someone who can't possibly deliver his or her own promises, that only breeds more cynicism. And then he talks about what he referred to as the false equivalences, that if you get someone to say X and then you find someone to say not X, you have done your business as a journalist. But that can't be true.
It's an issue that comes up regularly. I think it is the very easy way out for journalists to simply quote someone or paraphrase someone on one side of the issue and paraphrase someone on the other side of the issue and say you've done your job. Mm-hmm. I've covered both sides of the issue, but again, the false equivalency issue that he raises is right on target. What if they're not equal? What if they don't both deserve? What if one is right and one is wrong? Mm-hmm. That's where the work of journalists comes in, mm-hmm. to dig through the information, to come up with a conclusion, to analyze, to synthesize the sides of the issue, and to explain it to the audience, rather than just at a very superficial level say, candidate A says this, candidate B says that. Okay, what's the next story? It's the hard work of journalism, and it is what has fallen by the wayside. I would agree with him. I think that economic pressure is an excuse, because you can say, oh, we can't afford to do that. Yes, you could, if you chose to put your resources into substantive reporting rather than covering polls, covering the, it's so easy to cover the election campaign as a racehorse. In today's poll, so-and-so's ahead by these X percentage points, and that closed, compared to last week, is now, 0.3% closer than he was 2 weeks before that. Mm-hmm. And just in that context, you don't get anything about the issues whatsoever. I think it is a notable absence in journalism these days.
I've avoided watching any political debates.
I have too.
Whether there's 17 candidates or three or two. The way it's going now, political debates is to debate what Dancing with the Stars is to the Joffrey Ballet. It's a cruel parody of what it could be.
I refuse, by the way, to even use the word debate.
Well, it's not.
It's a joint news conference where people are just given opportunity to say whatever they want on whatever they want to talk about.
I've heard insults worse in those debates than I heard in the basement of the fraternity house 50 years ago. It's really crude and unpleasant stuff.
It panders. It panders to a small audience segment.
Then you get certain politicians butting heads with certain journalists, and that then becomes the issue. It doesn't become what we're going to do about the economy, what we're going to do about immigration, or all the other issues.
The personality part of it takes over rather than the substantive part of it.
Now, there's another whole level of news sourcing in addition to TV and newspapers, and that has to do with social media and blogs and Twitters and all that stuff. Where do you see that coming in? Because
it's a huge issue, because anybody can be a journalist. Anybody with a blog or a Facebook account or anything can say whatever they want, and whoever wants to tune into it or pay attention to it can do that without any vetting whatsoever, and the information gets out there, and therefore it is in many circles assumed to exist without any necessary vetting at all. Mm-hmm. That becomes a huge issue, especially when issues that have not been supported become part of the public discourse. What do the traditional media do? Do they report on it, or do they ignore it? Or what is their responsibility to that kind of an issue that does not meet any of their standards of vetting the story, but it's out there, enough people are talking about it? Does that make it become a story and elevate it into the arena of news coverage for that day, even though it doesn't meet their standard? That becomes a very tough issue for the traditional media to deal with.
If you're listening in and want to join the discussion with Jim Hoyt, the number is 608-210-1667. I remember now some presidents ago, Ronald Reagan had a favorite story to tell about the welfare queen who drove the Cadillac around. And it became clear that there wasn't such a person, that it was his fantasy and a very popular one that he could then develop a whole economic plan around. Soon as it was pointed out that there wasn't actually an individual that he was talking about, but a kind of projection, it didn't matter that there wasn't one. As long as it kept being played out there in all these media sources, it was assumed to be true because it was said.
It became a story unto itself.
Yeah.
I have a quick personal connection, kind of a footnote to history, and I was in Washington at NBC News in 1972. It was the McGovern-Nixon campaign, and you may recall McGovern's first vice presidential candidate was Senator Tom Eagleton from Missouri.
Didn't last
long. And there was a story by Jack Anderson in his column one morning reporting that he had information that Eagleton had been convicted of a DUI in Missouri, and he ran it in his column. And news organizations picked it up. Our desk editor, desk chief at NBC, was a friend of Jack Anderson's and called him. He was curious about the sourcing on it. And it turned out it was like a third-hand source, that he had a neighbor who knew somebody whose sister worked for the DOT in Missouri who had seen the record, whatever. Well, it was the kind of sourcing that we would never use. So we didn't go with the story. We didn't run it. Throughout the day, we were feeling very proud of ourselves. We were ethical. We had decided this story was not going to be on the NBC air. Finally, late afternoon, we had an editorial meeting and said, you know, we're really looking kind of stupid here. Like, we don't know what's going on in the world. Everybody else has it. People are calling in and saying, don't you people know about Eagleton's DUI? We've been hearing it everywhere else. So we had to reverse ourselves, and we used the story with the context of, you know, what the sourcing was or how bad the sourcing was. But we chose to ignore it, and we decided we couldn't ignore it anymore. Because it was out there, we had an obligation to do something about it.
Well, I remember when I was a student at Yale Divinity School, and we were part of a rumor control board during the Black Panthers' work in New Haven, and somebody called in and said, I hear that there are Black Panthers in New Haven Harbor in a submarine dressed like nuns. I said, well, we'll check that one out, but you may want to check your sources, too. So give us a call, 608-210-1667. We'll be back in a minute.
Welcome back to the Mitch Hanks Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to the Mitch Hanks Show.
This is Phil Blackwell. I'm sitting in as Mitch is home with his family today. I'm here with Jim Hoyt, professor of journalism and veteran of television news. And he's been talking about how important is it to us to know what are the sources of the news that we're hearing or seeing. I go onto Yahoo site and their news, and they have all these news stories. Some of them are by Associated Press. Some are by designation. I have no idea what they are. And I'm guessing that some are more dependable than others.
This is a concern of mine, and I have a worry that audience members are not as concerned about or as sensitive to the sources of information. It comes from oftentimes talking to people about, they'll comment about a news story or an issue that they're aware of that they've heard, and I'd say, where did you find that out? And oftentimes the response is, well, it's on the internet. So, yeah. Well, but where did it come from? Who did the reporting? Yeah. Who did the vetting? To me, I feel like I'm a generation too old that matters to me who did the work on it, who vetted the story, where did it come from. But I'm finding an awful lot of especially younger viewers who and audience members who are aware of what's going on in the world. They follow the news, but it's just something that's out there that comes on some aggregate media source that they get online, so they don't really know where it came from. But as long as it's out there and as long as this is another concern of mine, it agrees with them, then they'll go with it. I have used the line a number of times in recent years that I have a fear that audience members are looking less for information and more for ammunition.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we have a few more minutes with Jim Hoyt before we reach the top of the hour. If you want to get in on the conversation, the number is 608-210-1667. 608-210-1667. What questions should journalists be asking Trump and Sanders and Clinton these days?
Well, how? Why, and how are you going to do that? Mm-hmm. How are you going to work with Congress? How are you going to achieve the ends that you are talking about in your talking points during your campaign speeches? How are you going to fund free college education? How are you going to fund health care? How are you going to do this? I think that the candidates have been able to get by with very general, global answers. This is what I'm going to do, without being expected to come up with any reasonable work plan for how they're going to bring it about. And to me, the most significant one is they're going to have to work with Congress. How? Mm-hmm. It's running for president is very different than governing as president.
Yeah.
And that gap doesn't get addressed.
Well, I always figure if you're going to keep all the Muslims out, that's only the ones who can't play basketball. If you can get Kareem Abdul-Jabbar into Milwaukee, that's okay. But if you're 6'4" and under, watch out. What's the future of journalism as a discipline? It looks more dangerous around the world these days as journalists on the front lines or in there, the ones who I think we probably would admire being sources for news, but they're certainly being targeted.
It's a dangerous profession. There's no question about it. Asking questions, being the messenger. I mean, the old kill the messenger story, if they're asking questions you don't want to answer, the journalist can be at risk. If the journalist is reporting stories and news they don't want to hear, you can be at risk. Mm-hmm. So I think a journalist has to be brave, confident, and willing to absorb some heat in order to get the stories. And it's a small number. I think it's a dwindling number of journalists who are willing to do that. Mm-hmm. But I'm always impressed when I look at the list of Pulitzer Prizes and the local reporting that is being done. But they're few and far between. Mm-hmm. I keep hoping that the audiences will respond. To me, it gets back to that. If audiences respond to it, if they give positive feedback, if they're willing, if they watch the newscasts that have substance to them, if they buy the papers that have substantive reporting, then I'm happy. But there's a ways to go to get to that.
Mm-hmm. Do you buy a newspaper these days?
I do. I mean, hard copy. I get the New York Times. I get the Wisconsin State Journal just for local information. But online, I read three or four others: the Milwaukee Journal, the Wall Street Journal. No, not the Wall Street Journal. I can't afford it. Mm-hmm. USA Today, Chicago Tribune. Mm-hmm. To me, they're the sources that I have most confidence in.
Mm-hmm. My wife and I live in the sticks down in Whitewater Lake. We can't get a newspaper delivered to the house. The New York Times keeps sending us their come-ons, and then we tell them, well, come on, and they say, well, we can't find you, at least not for the price we're going to charge you.
Pretty soon they'll have a drone that'll drop it on your pier.
Yeah, right. Well, we call those geese. But we can't even get a cell signal down there. But then that's not all bad. But then the question, where do you get your news? And most of it's online. And then, as you say, what's the source of that? And then on Facebook, I'm getting news. That's sometimes how I learn about our own kids and grandkids. But there's an awful lot of stuff on there that is so unbecoming and probably untrue.
You don't know. When you don't know the sources and you don't have anything to go on regarding the background of the information, it's a very hazardous thing. I find myself resisting repeating supposed news that I see online if I don't know where it came from. If it sounds sketchy, I need more information.
Are we going to see more focused information from presidential candidates coming up in these next set of months? Because what I'm thinking is that when we see all the candidates now sitting down one-on-one or in any setting, it's free advertising for them. The questions are not being asked that actually get to, again, as you say, what's behind the claim that's ridiculous, so ridiculous, I've never seen anything so ridiculous. Okay, say more, but say something.
Yeah, and from what I can see, the campaigns are actively trying to keep the candidates away from the journalists to come up with staged opportunities for them to speak directly to a camera or with a friendly local journalist from various markets around the country because they're not as prepared to ask difficult questions as national reporters may be, but they're trying to insulate. And the job of journalism has got to be to try to get around that, but there's only so much they can do.
Yeah, not want to set up on the podium as if it were a fashion show, which it's become. Okay, we're going to take a break. We'll be back just with a few more minutes with Jim Hoyt here on The Mitch Hank Show.
You're listening to The Mitch Hank Show. Once again, here's the voice of uncommon sense, Mitch Hank.
Okay, this is Phil Blackwell sitting in for Mitch today, and we have just another minute or two with Jim Hoyt. After the hour, we'll be sitting with Fred Mose and talking about issues of downtown Madison. Jim, what would you teach now that would be different from 20 years ago in terms of journalism? What's the main message?
Well, journalism has changed dramatically in that it does not rely to the same degree that it had on what I would call traditional media outlets, traditional radio stations, television stations, newspapers, magazines. The internet and social media, it has a much wider range of sources of news. And for students, you ask about talking to students, those are all opportunities for them. I mean, the basic ingredients of a journalism education are the ability to express yourself or to speak or write clearly and cogently, and those are valued attributes in all of these media. But it's not the traditional media. I oftentimes hear people saying, so what kind of jobs do journalism graduates go to today? Mm-hmm. They go to all of these jobs. They are hired in those positions. It's just not that they're the traditional ones. So it needs a diverse skill set in terms of media.
Well, the ability to communicate an idea. I've said if you can write a paragraph, you can take over the world. A sentence isn't enough, and a whole page is more than you need. But if you can have a beginning, a middle, and an end, and make a point, you're on the way.
The ability to synthesize an idea and to critically comment on it.
Yeah. Well, Jim Hoyt, been our guest in this hour. Thank you very, very much. After the hour, Fred Mose, and we'll continue in our discussion. In this case, though, the topic will be about Madison itself and development downtown. Thank you, and remember to pick up on this show in a few minutes.